This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Covey staple.
So I was about to write that in my article because I had heard you say that on the radio before.
You could give it. You could give me attribution.
That's
fine.
Yeah, I could cite you next time.
No worries, brother. Ryan Covey.
But then I put gold because I looked it up and everybody else is calling it gold, but I don't think that's accurate.
No, it's muscle,
I mean, it's not. Yeah, gold is the 49ers helmet.
Sure.
Yeah. So
different, totally different color, different shade. It's no problem.
But only T.O. could come in that jacket on an overcast Santa Clara morning in October, you know, with absolutely no sunshine. Wearing very big, very dark sunglasses.
Of course.
Yeah, he just rolled in. I mean, he still looks like he's in playing shape.
I
think he is in playing shape. He's just not in playing age anymore. But he rolled in, sat down on the front row, and I thought that was the moment where, you know, we really started to at least publicly see the reparation of the relationship begin.
Yeah.
And then he was invited back to get, and he chose to get his Hall of Fame ring at Levi Stadium, which was a big deal.
Healing.
Yeah. The healing happened. He's been much more, you know, open to the media. I think on the conference call with him when he was inducted into the 49ers Hall of Fame, he was the one that kept on talking there at the end. Even when everybody was out of questions, he wanted to stay on
there. Tio likes the spotlight.
He does like the spotlight. But I wasn't covering the 49ers back when the divorce happened, but I think for months before that divorce happened, based on what I've heard, he wasn't speaking to local media anymore.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, he was definitely went into a shell.
And how about this? You know, I think it's fascinating. There's a lot of parallels, I think, between Terrell Owens and Barry Bonds. And they both played in the San Francisco market at around the same time. I grew up watching both of these guys, but everything down to, you know, the way both of those guys could single-handedly dominate a game in their respective sports,
absolutely,
I thought was pretty special. And they were both, in my opinion, at least with Bonds, delayed Hall of Fame induction very unnecessarily. T.O. has a case as one of the greatest receivers of all time. When he retired, it was number two statistically behind Jerry Rice.
Yeah.
And, you know, the parallels with Barry Bonds, you could say the greatest offensive force of all time, and you know, number two probably behind Willie Mays. The fact that both of those personalities, so divisive, so tough with the media at the time, played for, you know, in San Francisco. I mean, Candlestick Park and was still in the city back then. You know, the 49ers were still here. They weren't in Santa Clara. The fact they're both here at the same time makes me look back at the era and be like, wow, there was some real star power here. I guess now we have it on the basketball side.
Yeah.
Back then we had it in football and baseball.
Yeah, but the football and baseball teams weren't necessarily winning championships during that era either. But there was some individual star power, to say the least. So, yeah, Terrell Owens definitely has been re-embraced into the 49ers family. Let me ask you this, David. The Oakland Raiders, and I know you wrote a piece about some of the maneuverings. I first of all, once I kind of got over the shock of the Mike Mayock hire, the more I started to think about it, the more it really started to make sense to me, especially to put with a guy like John Gruden, who really probably shouldn't be trusted with things as important as draft picks. Just my personal thought on the matter, and even roster management in general. Like, he just needs to go be a coach. Go get him the ingredients, let him cook the meal. And I've got mixed feelings on whether or not I think John Gruden is the right guy for that. I mean, I think John Gruden's a terrific football mind, but I just don't know in 2019 now if his coaching style is suited for the modern-day game. But the Mike Mayock hire, here's a guy that knows a ton about draft evaluation and just understanding, you know, roster development, et cetera. I feel like with the Raiders having these three first-round picks, this is just such a critical time for them. Mike Mayock proved to me that, again, this is just one move, but at least he got me believing that he is absolutely the right guy for this job when he went out and got Antonio Brown for a third and a fifth. I mean, that is such a huge win for a front office, especially for that to be like your first big-time acquisition. Now, I know Brown Wrong side of 30. I know Brown's a little crazy, but
they got better with him.
6 years of 100 straight reception, six yeah. straight years of 100 plus receptions. Hard to argue with that.
Yeah. The thing is, this stuff is not black and white. People say that when you point out that Antonio Brown may, you know, be on the downslope of his career, they think that you're suggesting that Antonio Brown is garbage.
Right.
It's not black and white. He's still a very good receiver, and there are still a lot of teams in the National Football League who he would make better at the right cost, right? Some teams, and I think a lot of teams in this case, determined that it wasn't worth the headache, the trade capital,
sure.
the contractual capital that the Warriors that the Raiders had to give up here in this situation. Remember that the third and the fifth round draft pick, yes, that's a fairly cheap way to get a future Hall of Fame receiver, but they also had to negotiate a new contract
that's
with
right.
him, which was much pricier. And we already know the Raiders situation of not being able to pay guys because of cap situations, or, you know, at least determining that was the case with Khalil Mack last year. They thought that they'd be better off not paying him, letting him, you know, go to the Bears on that trade, and they wanted to save money for moves like this. So it did not come for free for the Raiders. When a lot of people say third and fifth, I agree that was a great move by Mayock to get that little, you know, to sacrifice that little draft capital. But they had to give some money in this situation for Antonio Brown, and I think it's going to be worth it for them. It wouldn't have been worth it for every team, but in the position that the Raiders are in, this is not just a football move.
Right.
This is also a, you know, we need to actually get out in front of this and convince people that we're in the business of show business and winning again instead
right.
of selling off all of our, you know, premier players. They're on the way to Vegas. They needed a splash move like this, and I think that Antonio Brown fits the bill despite the cost that, you know, money-wise is pretty high. And I think that was the argument a lot of people were making, right? Oh, they're not willing to invest in Khalil Mack, but they're willing to invest in Antonio Brown on the wrong side of 30. I think it's a lot more complicated than that because he, you know, the timing of this move and the things that he brings, it's very nuanced.
Yeah, I agree. It just did strike me as a little bit peculiar in the sense that which way are you headed here? Like, you trade Khalil Mack, you trade Amari Cooper, you acquire a bunch of first-round picks. To me, that signifies, hey, we're ripping this thing all the way down, and we're going to build it back up. And it's going to be a rebuild for a couple of years. And we want to hit Las Vegas with a bunch of young talent and something for the Vegas fans to be excited about. Not that we might win year one, but we're going to be competitive for many years to come because of this young nucleus. The Antonio Brown acquisition, to me, kind of went against the grain of where I felt like they were at.
So, one thing, Mike Mayock, I think it's you have to also judge a lot of these personnel moves to the Raiders as before Mayock and after Mayock, probably, because
yeah.
I think having that tempering voice in the room has changed the franchise course a little bit. Now, I'm not in the extreme camp of, hey, the Khalil Mack trade was a terrible idea. I'm also in the wait-and-see camp for that one. I want to see what the Raiders do with the resulting draft picks, and I think that may be a trade that ultimately is not frowned upon as badly as it initially was if they hit the draft. So what
right.
Mayock does with this draft is extremely important. With the Antonio Brown trade and the signing, I agree with you. I think that post-30 signing at a point where the franchise may not even be at, you know, a 6 or 7 win point yet is quizzical. It's one of those things that makes you scratch your head. But I do think that it also needs to be evaluated from more than just that X's and O's standpoint.
Yeah.
There's the whole energy in the building factor that the Raiders did not get right last year. There was not
Boy,
good energy
right about
in the building.
That.
There was the whole Derek Carr crying fiasco and the empty locker room. I mean, the difference between the 49ers locker room last year going into it as a reporter and the Raiders locker room was stark. I mean, it was dead. It was a ghost town in Alameda at that Raiders locker room. There was not good budding energy within the building.
Right.
And the 49ers, to their credit, despite the fact they haven't had a winning team the past 2 years, they've had the energy in the building. And I think the energy in the building is necessary for a team that's on its way up. I think that you can have a divided building and, you know, tough things, t- tough situations going around if you're a winning team. The Patriots, obviously, are a great example of that. We hear all these stories.
Take that, Seth Wickersham.
Exactly. So you could still win with that if you're an established franchise. But right. a team that's building, and I think both of these barrier teams fall into that category, you need to get some goodwill. You need to get some good feeling in the building. And I think that the Raiders felt that the energy was just depleted last year. Trading Mac just sucked the life out of any potential building effort last season because he's a potential building block. And I think that Mike Mayock came in and said, hey, we need to do something that shows that the Oakland Raiders are committed to not only building the winning product down the road, but also committed to establishing that positive energy right now, because that's what's going to get this ship moving.
No doubt about it. All right, David Lombardi of The Athletic will come back. And by the way, I've got a really interesting nugget for you, and it involves favorites in the AFC next year. Boy, you talk about a team that's been on the rise. We'll tell you that coming up next. David Lombardi, Ryan Covey hanging out on a Sunday, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
888-957-9570. If you have a question for David Lombardi regarding the 49ers or the Raiders free agency period, the signings, and what may lie ahead for these teams in the NFL draft, Chilton Autobody text line 95-795. 650 said the Raiders didn't have any upfront money guaranteed for Khalil Mack. We know that Mark Davis is one of the more cash-poor owners in professional sports. I heard, David, that they didn't even have enough money to, I don't understand the whole process, but tying up in an escrow account to even show that you had the funds available to make some of these deals? I mean, that's how drastic the situation is for Mark Davis?
It seems that reports like that always come out, but around the time when the Raiders have to spend and they don't. But then,
so are you saying the Raiders are putting this stuff out there?
But then you see what they just did. They literally signed Trent Brown to the biggest contract for an offensive lineman in NFL history, and right. by annual average value, Antonio Brown was the biggest contract in NFL history for a wide receiver. So do they have money or don't they have money? I mean, you have to have some to set two records yeah. within 2 days of each other.
And I heard that has to do with when Mark Davis gets that revenue sharing check.
He gets it later.
Yeah.
And a lot of this stuff, it's really funny with the Raiders contracts along that line. It's good for the players too, but they have deferred a lot of this salary, especially for Trent Brown. Let me pull up the deal here. This one's funny. Because of the Nevada lack of state income tax.
He's like, yo, pay me later, yeah, man. Yeah. I don't want my guarantees now.
Exactly.
Pay me when we're in Nevada and I don't have to give Uncle Sam half my check. That makes sense.
It is an extremely skewed deal in that regard for Trent Brown, which it's crazy because I still remember Trent Brown a couple years ago in the 49ers locker room, and now to think that he's, he was always good, a great pass blocker, right. even with the 49ers, but to see how absurdly unbalanced this deal is and to think of him as the highest paid lineman in NFL history, it's just, the NFL comes at you fast, let me just put it that way.
But 100%.
Base salary of $5 million here in 2019. He does have a roster bonus of $10 million here, so that does give him money right away. But the base salary goes up from $5 million to $21.25 million
Ooh.
In year two. So he better hope there's no delays with that Las Vegas stadium because that's going to be quite literally probably $1 million or $2 million proposition for Trent Brown moving from California to Nevada next year. And that's how the deal's structured. And I guess it helps the Raiders, too, because if they don't have the money until next year, and I don't know this, so don't quote me, but there have been reports. I think who was the last guy to do it? It was a pretty legitimate NFL guy. Was it Mortensen? Somebody? I forgot. Yeah, he said that the Raiders were struggling financially. But that is all. If that is an issue, that's something that should be rectified by the money that this stadium in Las Vegas will bring.
That's what Mark Davis is hoping for. That's for damn sure. This is just coming down here in the last hour or so. The Cleveland Browns, who we know have been very active, they've been trading, they've been signing free agents, they've been busy, and they also found out that Kareem Hunt is going to be suspended for the first 8 games. They knew a suspension was coming, but they'll have him for the second half of the season. They've got Nick Chubb in that backfield as well. Baker Mayfield, he's playing first base coach in spring training. He's living a charmed existence right now. And how about this? With the acquisition of Odell Beckham Jr., the Super Bowl odds for the Browns shifted from 25-1 to 14-1, and they are now, the Superbook Saturday opened with the Browns at +140 to win the division, ahead of the Pittsburgh Steelers at +160, and ahead of the Baltimore Ravens at +250. Vegas is buying in on the Cleveland Browns being the favorite to win the AFC North.
Are you sure it was because of the March 13th trade for Odell Beckham Jr., or was it because the other move the Browns executed that day, re-signing linebacker Ray-Ray Armstrong?
Oh, it's got to be Sugar Ray. It's got to be Ray-Ray Armstrong.
That one flew under the radar, man.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing what a Ray-Ray Armstrong signing will do flying under the radar when you acquire one of the top wide receivers in the game. What'd you think of what they got in return? I mean, it's always easy, and we talked about this with the Raiders in the Khalil Mack trade. At the time, you're like, what do you mean you traded Khalil Mack? All you got was some lottery tickets. And I even said it at the time, like, so let me get this straight. You have a player which in Khalil Mack is like hitting the lottery, and so you take those lottery winnings and you trade him for a bunch of more lottery tickets.
Now, see if I can win again.
Yeah, it's like, well, but you already hit the lottery, so what are you worried about? But the other side of it is, especially when it comes to acquiring draft picks, because you don't get that instant gratification. It's kind of like putting something on layaway, putting something on your credit card, where we'll pay for that later. And, you know, from the Bears' perspective, like, I happen to be a Bears fan, so the day that they acquired him, I'm like, hell yeah, Khalil Mack. And, you know, you saw what he did against the Packers. And thank you, the shuffling crew. Thank you, Pappas. That's it. But then you realize, oh, yeah, wait, where's the Bears' first-round pick this year? Oh, they don't have one. And, you know, here come the Oakland Raiders. They've got 3 first-round picks this year. So to that end, did the Odell Beckham deal surprise you in the sense of what the Giants weren't able to get back in return?
Well, yes, because they had just re-signed Odell Beckham. You know, the Raiders, it would be a whole different story if they had just re-signed Khalil Mack and then they traded him away and they had to take on some dead money because they gave him a huge signing bonus, right? So in that trade with the Browns and the Giants, the reason it made so little sense, and when you compare it to the Raiders trade, the Raiders trade is still potentially justifiable down the road because we need to see, as you said, what happens with these draft picks, what happens with the Raiders' financial situation. But I don't think the Giants trade is justifiable in any world because of the actions that they took just before making the trade, right?
Yeah.
Not that long before then, because of the dead money they have to take, because of the signing bonus, that you know, the needless signing bonus that they got Odell Beckham Jr. if they were just going to trade him away. So it's hard for me to find any argument that says what they got back. What was it, a first rounder and a third rounder?
Yeah.
And a couple players? It's hard for
Jabril
me.
Jabril Peppers, yeah.
Exactly. Oh, it's not like Odell Beckham Jr. is a 31, 32-year-old receiver. The guy's 27 years old.
I think he's played 16 games once in his career.
Yeah, played 15 once, 12 a couple times, and then he had the 4-game season when was it Achilles, I think, he tore? Yeah, or an ACL.
Yeah, I think it was an ACL.
It was ACL, yeah. So it was the ACL injury. That was in 2017. He only played 4. So if there is an argument to say that, okay, maybe he's not the most durable player, but he still is, at the window of his career where you can, I think, very reasonably expect prime-like numbers to come from him. So it's really hard for me to justify, if I'm the Giants, and impossible, I would say, to justify, really any reasonable cost here. I don't think there is a reasonable cost. And the point that you bring up is great with the lottery. Yeah, you get a first-round pick back, but Odell Beckham Jr. was playing better than every single first-round pick that you could possibly make.
And that's why I think
from now until eternity.
And I think that's why a lot of 49ers fans felt like, wait, so instead of Odell Beckham Jr., an established commodity, even if it's something as valuable as the number 2 overall pick, John Lynch hasn't exactly proven to 49ers fans in his 2 drafts, so we want to be mindful of that. And again, we'll see how this all plays out. But definitely draft one with Solomon. I don't see him taking some quantum leap in this now year three. And obviously Reuben Foster not even being on the roster anymore. I think 49ers fans, a lot of them felt like, hey, you know what? I'd rather take what's basically a sure thing with Odell Beckham Jr. as far as being an established talent versus let's just go out and see what we get with that number two pick. To me, the number two pick, I almost felt like because the Giants had the number six pick, you could do some kind of trade back where maybe you trade the two pick, but it has to involve you getting back the number six pick and then maybe some more draft capital, like your second rounder next year, something like that. I know you don't have that with D4, but you know, maybe your second rounder this year, something along those lines.
Yeah, something in the future. I think that 2-6 swap is what a lot of people saw as the reasonable path for the 49ers to be able to trade for Odell Beckham Jr. I don't know if there's been any firm reporting on whether or not that was rejected or discussed. I do know that the Giants wanted the number two pick. I think Jay Glazer went out and said that today in one of his mailbag pieces, and the 49ers were not willing to part with that number two pick. And, you know, then this, it's a very nuanced discussion that goes down to how much the 49ers value a star being in one of those receiver positions and how much they think that Kyle Shanahan, with a very adept quarterback and a healthy Jimmy Garoppolo, can, you know, scheme production. And they obviously value it at least a little bit because they were, you know, inquiring into a trade, but they didn't value it at the point of giving up the number two pick, which they think they could either flip into more picks or use for an elite defender. And I think this team right now, after the moves it's made, I think the edge rusher is the one we've been harping on for over a year at this point. And you know, we've seen bolstering of the secondary. The depth is better around the roster now. You theoretically replaced Reuben Foster with Quan Alexander. Of course, you hope he's healthy. But I think that given what the 49ers have done, I think they're a blue chip defender or two away from being a serious contender. And I think that they saw the path to getting those blue chip defenders through retaining the number one pick, the number two pick. And if you give that up to trade for Odell Beckham Jr., yeah, great. You score a couple more points a game offensively, but you're still on that treadmill leaking oil on the defensive side.
Yeah,
and that is the cost benefit analysis they made, and they determined it wasn't worth it to give up that pick.
Let me ask you this. Year three now, and we've talked for, you know, a while, you know, last couple hours now about just how important this year is, and you could just throw a myriad of different reasons why that's the case. Bottom line, if you're Jed York and you're sitting back and you're ultimately going to be grading out this regime after year three, what constitutes a successful season in your estimation? Is it 500? Is it just, hey, Jimmy Garoppolo looks every part the franchise quarterback? Is it this defense is generating turnovers? I mean, because it's ultimately wins and losses. And 2 years in, Kyle Shanahan, 10 wins, 22 losses. It's time for the, you know, whatever you want, you know, the offensive genius, whatever you want to call him. It's time to deliver wins, which is what gets you to the playoffs and ultimately get you back where you want to be.
Let's just lay out a grading rubric here. I think that
rubric.
We're going to go through the different possibilities. Losing season, I mean, anything could happen after this year if this is another losing season.
And you're talking like as far as making changes.
Yes.
Okay.
I think if they have another losing season here, regardless of the reason, you know, it's you could play that injury card, and it was very fair to play it last year.
Right.
But you could play it once, but then, for the second time, then you start to wonder, well, hey, so, you know, why was Jimmy Garoppolo your guy if he's just going to keep on getting hurt? You know, it's one of those things. It could snowball really quickly. So I think losing season, all bets are off. I think 500 season means the 49ers have treaded water, and it makes the season after that a playoff hot seat kind of year. Like, you need to make the playoffs. I think if they make the playoffs this year as a wild card team, you're on track. I think the whole point of this, you know, all this contractual structuring that the 49ers have been doing and the whole layout of the long-term plan was for 2019 to be the year that you go all in. And they did that knowing that the Rams are going to go all in 2018.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I think it was actually very smart of the 49ers. It was astute of them to realize that a lot of their positions of biggest need, there weren't players available or to pick up in 2018. It was a very light edge rusher free agency class and draft class last year. So what did the 49ers do? They paid Jimmy Garoppolo his big cap hit last year, sat back, waited for the Rams to blow through their big chance this season, right, when the Rams spent all that money, made all those trades. And they did that realizing that 2019 would be the year where they would be the NFL's big spenders. And the 49ers now have spent $53 million against the cap this year. So they lowered Jimmy Garoppolo's cap hit to $19 million this season. They spent all that money. They got, you know, Dee Ford. They still have a draft with a lot of capital, the number two overall pick coming up. And that all lines up into needing to see results on the field. You know, you could talk about the overarching plan forever, but we're coming up on it now. Yeah. We're coming up on the games where that overarching plan has to turn into a reality. Yeah. So I think that that's why there's so much pressure on this 2019 season. That's why all hell will break loose if this is a losing season. I think that, you know, simply going 500 will not make anybody comfortable. I think you really do need to take that winning season. Yeah. If it's a winning season, you don't make the playoffs because the division's really strong.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's a clear sign, a step in the right direction. But I really think that this is the one that the 49ers have circled on their calendar for quite some time.
Let me ask you this then. So the team's 4-12 last year. 8-8, I mean, that's only 500, but 8-8, that's doubling your win total.
Yeah, but, I mean, we know why they were 4-12 last year. I mean, the minute Jimmy Garoppolo went down, you tack on, what, 5, 6, 7 extra losses? I don't know how exactly you could quantify that, but you go from the guy who was literally the best quarterback in the league over December 2017, but according to every single advanced metric.
Yeah.
Yes, it was an indictment of Shanahan's drafting that C.J. Beathard wasn't a more competent backup, but still, if you're relying on your backup to win in the NFL these days, you have to catch lightning in the bottle. I understand that the Philadelphia Eagles caught lightning in a bottle, but don't apply the same standard to every single team. That's just not the reality of the league. You need an upper tier starting quarterback healthy to legitimately compete. And I think that the moment that Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt, if somebody had told me the 49ers had finished 4-12, I'd put my money on that.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah, like, I thought the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you have to toss out the 2018 season if you're going to be making realistic predictions about 2019. And if you're the 49ers, you banked every single signing on this. You have to hope the guys stay healthy. That's the key.
Who's got the final say-so down there, David, as far as draft picks and free agency? Is it Shanahan or is it Lynch?
Based on my understanding, it's Shanahan because he hired Lynch, right?
The hiring was contingent on, hey, I'm bringing you in, you're the quote GM, but you're basically, I've got final say so.
Yeah, and that's never been explicitly said, and they always try to hammer down that this is a cooperative effort, but this is not your typical GM is running the personnel and the coach just works with whatever the GM gets him. This was actually conducted in the opposite way as far as the hiring process went. Normally, the GM will bring the coach aboard. Well, this time the coach brought the GM aboard. So when I write my pieces, I think you'll notice that when I talk about the 49ers brain trust, I say Coach Kyle Shanahan and General Manager John Lynch. I put it in that order just because I feel that's slightly how the power structure works. But I do think the 49ers are being honest when they say it's very collaborative. I don't think that's just lip service.
Yeah.
I think that they're generally on the same playing field as far as personnel goes, which is exceptional because normally it's not that way with the GM and the coach.
Yeah, I'm just rattling my brain here to think of another scenario like that, especially a young coach like Kyle Shanahan, who this was his first go around as a head coach. I mean, I almost feel like that's too much to put on him, especially when you gave him, instead, like, okay, I'm thinking of Sean McVay down in L.A. Like, they got Les Snead running the front office. You don't have to worry about that. They got Wade Phillips, the old grizzled veteran, running the defense. He's got a young guy running his defense in Robert Saleh. He's got a first-time general manager in John Lynch. And he's got an owner who, really, if ever an owner needed to take a back seat and stay the hell out of things for a few years, it was this one. That seems like a lot to put on Kyle Shanahan. And, oh, yeah, by the way, reverse the momentum of this franchise that's been heading in the wrong direction for a couple years. And it's the same franchise that has 5 Lombardi trophies and the fans expect, like, wins and playoffs and Super Bowls.
Yeah, I mean, the 49ers, it's a tough situation when you're trying to turn around a franchise that, you know, lives in the past when it's not doing well, right? So just improving for a lot of the fan base is not enough, because they still remember Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, Steve Young, even Terrell Owens. They still remember those years. So, you know, just a marginal improvement from 6-10 to 9-7 is still going to leave people yearning for the glory days. So,
no.
It's, you know, there's a lot on Kyle Shanahan's plate. It's why he got a big contract. And I think it's also why he was very smart to negotiate that six-year deal. You know, you don't see six-year deals very often.
I know.
In the coaching profession, especially for a first-time guy. But he saw how trigger-happy the 49ers had been with the previous coaches, and he wanted a little bit of, you know, security and assurance that he'd be given ample time to turn it around, to do what was necessary. And as we talked about at the very top, I guess we'll bring it full circle here for this visit. This was something that the 49ers had to strip down totally.
Yeah.
You know, it rotted. It had rotted, so you had to tear it down to the studs and rebuild it. And Kyle Shanahan's, you know, he saw this roster when he was being interviewed, and he was very open with Jed York about how deficient things were.
Yeah.
And then so when he was hired, I think that was something that was really appealing to Jed York, is that Kyle Shanahan was very realistic with him. He said,
like, oh, no, these guys are good. I'm the right guy to get it out of him. He's like, no, these guys aren't good, and we need to rebuild this thing from the bottom to the top.
And he was very honest about that. And then that later helped him secure that six-year deal, because he was so honest about that. He said, hey, I can't turn this around in 1 or 2 years.
Well played, young Kyle Shanahan. Yeah. Absolutely. Any chance that they're going to go out and maybe go sign a Justin Houston or a Ziggy Ansah, somebody like that, you think?
Ziggy Ansah was extremely interesting to me. If you look at Pro Football Focus and you look at some of the pass rush productivity scores, advanced stats,
mm-hmm.
number one guy in the NFL last year.
Wow.
In the time that he actually played.
Right. Before
he
got
all the
shoulder
time.
Injury. Yeah. Yeah, he does.
I mean, that would make people pull their hair out even more, because it would be another. It seems like he's struggling to get a contract, you know, at the level of other guys who are as good as him pass rushing wise, because of that poor health record. It would fall right in line with what the 49ers are doing if they could find a good value deal to bring him in.
Yeah.
I don't know if they can, just because I think he's a little bit more established than some of these other guys. And it's tough. I don't think they're going to go that route, but it wouldn't surprise me given what they've done. He is accomplished, but he's also very often injured. Justin Houston, that's one that's
a name I
bounced around a lot.
Yeah. 49ers fans would have definitely heard him talked about a lot, even for the Raiders.
It's going to be interesting. Yeah, but the Raiders need a pass rusher. I mean, I don't think the Raiders are a legitimate turnaround contender until they address the league's worst pass rush. It was literally the league's worst by a huge margin last year. It was single digits in sacks.
Raiders fans were envious of the 49ers pass rush last year.
Yeah, the 49ers were actually middle
DeForest
of the pack.
Buckner. Yeah, they had DeForest Buckner.
They didn't have an edge rush. That was the problem. They had the interior. They didn't have the edge. Now that's why they go out and get D Ford. So.
Yep. Well, hopefully he can stay healthy. All right, last one. Hey, David, I really appreciate you coming in. David Lombardi of The Athletic. All right, winners in free agency. For me, I've got the Cleveland Browns big time. And I'll throw, you know, this whole period, the league new year beginning with, you know, the Odell Beckham acquisition. I think the Ravens, with Mosley and Thomas, I think that they've done a nice job. Outside of, you know, I thought Le'Veon Bell would probably get a little more guaranteed money. I'll stop short of declaring the Jets winners. And I'm not over the moon about Sam Darnold. Over in the NFC, though, I mean, the 49ers, and again, it's, you know, free agency is one of those things where you got to let it play out for a couple years, but just spending money and, you know, like you've laid it out so astutely today about how they can get out of a lot of these deals, and they're getting guys at a bargain of what they normally would because some of these guys have a bit of an injury track record. Now, I know that there's risk there, but that's inherently the name of the game in free agency. It's risky anytime you bring in free agents. You look across any sport, there's hits and misses all over free agency. But I think at least I can see the plan for John Lynch. What do you think, free agent winners?
The Cleveland Browns. I mean, any time that you are able to change the narrative so drastically in such a short period of time, and I think it's really hard to be a winner in free agency. Let's preface it with that.
That's fair.
I think that the teams that are actually consistent winners, let's put it this way, don't typically make huge free agent splashes. I mean, the New England Patriots, use free agency as a way to get compensatory picks and then just dominate that way. They let Trent Brown walk. They let Trey Flowers walk this year. By the way, I think that the Lions really, that's the comparison I made for the D4 deal with the 49ers. Trey Flowers to the Lions, about $20 or $30 million more in fully guaranteed money. Yes, D Ford's only done it at this level for 1 year, but I think that's a good deal for the Niners when you look to see what the Lions paid for Flowers. But you see the Patriots letting these big-name guys walk, and then they get compensatory picks in return, which nobody talks about. And then they usually draft really well with those compensatory picks, and they're able to keep an excellent supporting cast around Tom Brady at a budget, and they keep on winning Super Bowls.
Sure.
So I think that the main point is that it's really hard to be a consistent winner through free agency.
Right.
You can maybe be a one-time winner, and I think that, you know, we might have seen that with the Cleveland Browns this year. We might have seen it with the local teams this year, but we're going to have to wait, especially with the 49ers, because there's so many asterisk injury and sample size signings. But with free agency, the Browns, I think, have managed to reverse the narrative. But if they want to make that sustainable, they're going to have to take a page from the book of the team that does it the best, and that's the Patriots.
Yep.
That's the team that doesn't have to resort to the inherently flawed free agency process every year, and they instead use it to get the capital that they use in the draft to stay on top of the league.
No doubt. Great stuff, David. At Lombardi himself on Twitter. We'll be reading in The Athletic. Appreciate your time, brother. It was a lot of fun, man.
Yeah, this was great.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. David Lombardi of The Athletic. By the way, coming up top of the hour, Michael Urban and Matt Kolsky will be rolling in on 95.7 The Game. A little piece of breaking news to get you in the NFL, and it's not earth-shattering news. Ryan Fitzpatrick headed to the Dolphins. We know that the Dolphins traded Ryan Tannehill for a bucket of rusty nails to the Tennessee Titans, so they needed to add to their quarterback room. They had Luke Falk and some other dude that I've never even heard of as their quarterbacks. And when you think about who's still out there, the Mike Glennons of the world, I guess Ryan Fitzpatrick, because he had a couple of decent starts with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year, but ultimately, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick will show himself to be exactly who he's been his whole career, but he is a guy now that the Dolphins have added. We'll see what this does as far as will the Dolphins maybe be in on a potential deal for Josh Rosen, who could be available out there, as we know Cliff Kingsbury has been not shy about his affection for Kyler Murray, and a lot of these dominoes still need to fall, but that's why we love this time of year. By the way, I wanted to just get in a little bit of Warriors talk before I hit the end of the show here. Golden State Warriors with a marquee win last night over the Oklahoma City Thunder, and I thought what they did defensively for me last night was just the truest indicator to me that this team is getting back on track and now kind of has that playoff focus, because there's only, you know, we're now getting inside of that, you know, what, 12 games left before the postseason. So you want to see the team to start to look like they're in that run to the playoffs and really start to click on all cylinders. And I really think the loss to the Suns last week was one of those moments where, okay, this is officially us not doing the things that have made us successful over the years. And this is proof in the pudding that we haven't been as good as we can be in the regular season. Now, flipping the switch as we move towards the postseason, that's all Warriors fans want to see. I don't think anybody was losing their mind over a regular season loss to the Phoenix Suns. But it was a bad look, and I think collectively, as a group, the Warriors have answered the bell in the right way. I mean, you look at the numbers defensively the last four games, 101.7 defensive rating. That's been terrific. They held Oklahoma City to a season low in points last night. I thought the way that they defended Russell Westbrook as a group was terrific. They end up forcing 10 steals. They had six blocks. Just a lot of positives to take away. And you think about the job they did in the first half in Oklahoma City last night. I mean, they held Oklahoma City to 34% shooting in the first half, 5 of 19 from three-point range. Meanwhile, Steph and Clay, they're filling it up. They ended up with 33 combined points in the first half. Dubs, you know, that one of those truisms in Warrior basketball, like, if they hit, if they have 30 assists in a game, they're usually going to win. If they hit 10 threes in a game, they're usually going to win. Well, last night, they had 10 threes in the first half. And then, for me, I'm looking at the job that the second unit has been doing. And Steve Kerr having to tinker with Kevin Durant being out of there. And this group of Quinn Cook, Sean Livingston, Jordan Bell, Klay Thompson, and DeMarcus Cousins. In both the Houston and Oklahoma City game, they started the second quarter and the fourth quarter. They've been a positive, you know, as far as plus-minus goes, in all four of those instances, plus 14 in 20 minutes overall together. And the other thing that affords Steve Kerr to do, of course, is to keep Draymond Green and Steph Curry together in their first unit and give those guys some rest. And by the way, coming up next, it's San Antonio and then Memphis on Monday. San Antonio, Minnesota on Monday and Tuesday. San Antonio Spurs have been playing some damn good basketball. And, you know, every year it's almost like the St. Louis Cardinals in baseball, where every year I'm ready to say, oh, this is the year it all catches up to them. And then yet here they are. And I felt like that way about the Cardinals more a couple years ago, because now, you know, throw Paul Goldschmidt in there and, you know, Ozuna, and they always just kind of find a way to get it done. But the same could be said about the San Antonio Spurs. And you know, you thought, hey, Kawhi's leaving. Is this the end of the road? I don't think that they're a threat to win the NBA title. But I remember talking to some NBA voices, you know, as recently as a couple of weeks ago, and they said, hey, the Spurs probably would be the most attractive first-round matchup for the Golden State Warriors, just based on matchups, et cetera. I mean, right now I'm looking at the way the Spurs are playing. First of all, they're not going to be in that spot because right now they got a game lead over the Clippers for the A spot. So I guess it's still possible. But the way they're playing these days, I mean, they've won 8 in a row, and they're feeling pretty good about themselves, 28-7 at home. So if the Warriors can find a way to go into San Antonio and win this game tomorrow night, that's really going to signify to me that this team is officially back and clicking on all cylinders. And I know that this drew some ire from some Warriors fans earlier, because how dare I ponder an existence of the Golden State Warriors without Kevin Durant. But I couldn't help but think about it, watching Curry and Klay last night and watching the spacing afforded to DeMarcus Cousins. Not that they would be better off without Kevin Durant. Don't read me saying that for one split second. Not what I'm saying. All I'm saying is, the last two games, it gave me reason to ponder life without Kevin Durant and say, you know what? This team would probably still be a playoff team for sure, a playoff favorite most definitely. And let me put it to you like this. If I'm betting Golden State Warriors or the field, I still think I'm taking the dubs. I do. Because they've earned that. Oh, by the way, we did put out a poll question on our Weekend 95.7 Twitter account, and this was my big question today. Is Steph Curry appreciated, his greatness truly appreciated outside of the Bay Area in NBA circles? Only 38% say hell yeah, 62% said hell no. So I do think that it's a narrative that exists out there, and whether it's, you know, the Charles Barkleys of the world, I know Mark Jackson tends to say a lot of complimentary things about Steph Curry, but for the most part, there's still a lot of sour grapes there, and he'll give a lot of those backhanded compliments to Steph Curry. But, you know, in these national games, it's often pretty clear that not everybody appreciates what Steph Curry does. And look, the guy, he's not 6'9", okay? And I'm never going to hold his stature against him. I'm just not. And when you think about what he's able to accomplish with that frame on a basketball floor, why I separate him, the guy can do things that not only can any other player in the league can't do, any other player in NBA history. Like, it's historical stuff that Steph Curry is able to do. And I just feel like, for whatever reason, because he's not chiseled out of granite like LeBron or Giannis, he doesn't have the body type of KD, some of these other guys, I just feel like he doesn't get enough respect. And, you know, hey, I'm always going to take up for Wardell Stephen Curry, okay? This is actually what I tweeted out last night. I said, is it me or does the basketball world sleep on Steph's greatness? Bottom line, this man can do things that not one other player in history can claim. Let's see here. Joe says, the best player in the game. He does things no others can. Thumbs up. This was a pretty funny one. This guy, PC in San Jose, said, watching with my young son, me, Curry moves off screens and gets open looks and breaks people's ankles, and then it just, his son injected, he's the greatest shooter ever. And then he said, me, you got me. So there you go. Let's see. Shiram says, people definitely sleep. History will tell it, though. For now, let's just enjoy the spectacle. Wanda says, He should have won the finals MVP last year. Durant's a great player, but Steph is everything. You know, just kind of going back to the finals last year, I could have seen that, you know, when especially after what happened in the Western Conference Finals and, you know, the way Steph led the charge. I kind of felt like finals MVP, if they would have went Steph. Let me tell you this. I didn't have a problem with KD being the finals MVP, but I thought Steph being the finals MVP, that would have been totally legitimate as well. But, you know, I'm not going to hate on Kevin Durant either, okay? There's no doubt about that. All right, let's see. Rico says, I say this every night I watch. He's must-watch television. You don't want to miss a second of him playing. He's that special. So grateful he reps the Bay, too. And isn't that part of it, like the love affair with Steph Curry here in the Bay Area? Because, you know, we've watched this guy, like, go from three-point shooting specialist to... can this Warriors team win with this backcourt with him and Monte? To now you add Klay Thompson to the mix. To A, they've made the playoffs. Curry's an all-star. Man, he sure can shoot them threes. To Steve Kerr gets here. Now all of a sudden the Warriors are NBA champions and Curry's the face of the franchise. And now here we are in 2019. And, I mean, Curry's just an icon straight up and one of the most important faces in the NBA. So just watching that rise and just the way that he handles everything too. Don't ever take this for granted, Warriors fans. This is something very special. And by and large, I don't think Warriors fans do. And you know, the conversation that I want to get into this week, I'll be back on the Butcher Shop with Joe Shasky coming up this week. And the conversation that I definitely want to get into is, you know, now that we're coming down the home stretch with Oracle, just, you know, keeping that vibe alive, because I know a lot of Warriors fans, after Klay said what he said post-game after the Suns game, you know, need more from the Warriors fans, etc. You know, this sentiment that the vibe at Oracle has changed as the, quote, bandwagon fan has joined the party. You know, personally, I don't have a huge issue with bandwagon fans. To me, they're just fans. I mean, this stuff's supposed to be for everybody. And if you have, quote-unquote, bandwagon fans, you know what that means? Like, your team's very successful. So take the bitter with the sweet, I suppose, Warriors fans. And I know it may take some of the shine off of the Oracle experience, but I think we make too much of that anyway, man. Just go there and enjoy this ride that they're on right now. And I think it's important, too, to you know, close out Oracle with a little bit of style. And, you know, I know there's a handful of regular season games left, and, of course, we will have plenty of playoff games as well. But just in general, I just feel like we want to make sure that we appreciate this last little run at Oracle. And, you know, that building, boy, I'm an East Bay guy, man. I've grown up at Oracle. I've been to so many different events there. Dude, I could remember going to, like, concerts there. I remember a Beastie Boys concert. Dude, I saw the Grateful Dead at Oracle, okay? That's how far back I... like, the Jerry Garcia-led Grateful Dead, okay? I saw Oakland Skates games there, the old roller hockey team. Dude, I remember going to the circus there as a kid, going and seeing Run TMC. So, it'll be sad, and I do get nostalgic like that. But, hey, it's the cycle of life. And guess what? The Chase Center... Chase Center is going to be dope. By the way, I saw the guys out there on KGO last night. Donald Foyle and Coach Keating and Larry Beal were out there. So good stuff. All right, we're going to jam out. Thank you so much to who do we have on? Well, we had David Lombardi on in studio, of course. Oh, and then Sam Amick. Sorry, had to pop that name in there. Slamming Sam Amick joined us as well. Thanks to James Pappas on the other side of the glass, as well as Daniel Feliciano. Coming up next, it's Matt Kolsky and Michael Urban. I'll be on hanging out with the Butcher Boy all week long. Have a great weekend, everybody. Be safe out there.
Next question.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.